Welcome to Dealer Driven, where the rubber meets the road to success. This episode sponsored by Podium, the number one converting AI employee for dealerships.
Most dealership software was built for yesterday's workflows. Podium is built for what's next. An all-in-one system with the number one converting AI trusted by over 6,000 dealerships. Discover more at automotive.podium.com.
Welcome to Dealer Driven. I'm Michael Hayes.
And I'm Cameron Wilson. Today we're exploring a unique intersection in the automotive industry, the connection between motorsports and retail automotive. While racing and dealerships may seem like very different worlds, both depend on leadership, teamwork, precision, and a relentless focus on performance.
Joining us today is our friend Bud Denker, president of Penske Corporation. Bud oversees a diverse portfolio of businesses, including one of the world's largest transportation service companies, a global automotive retail operation, and some of the most successful racing teams in sports.
Few organizations have achieved success at the level Penske has, both on the track and in the showroom. Bud has spent decades helping drive that success, building high-performance teams and creating a culture centered on continuous improvement, innovation, and accountability.
Today, we'll talk about the lessons racing can teach dealership leaders, the role education plays in building winning organizations, and how the automotive industry may evolve over the next decade. Let's get started.
Bud, welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you, Cameron, for having me on your show today. I've been waiting for this moment. I've seen your shows in the past, and the folks you've had on there, they're very interesting. I hope I can at least compliment that a little bit as we go forward the next few minutes of our conversation.
Thank you so much, Bud. You know, you oversee an incredibly diverse portfolio from the global dealerships to elite racing teams. How do you describe the connection between racing and retail automotive?
You know, Rogers has used the phrase, the common thread, for, you know, throughout the course of our 60-year journey of racing. This is our 60th year of being on the racetrack with competing at high-performance teams all over the world. This year, we'll race in over 70 races. Roger will attend most of them. I'll attend most of them as well, too. But the connections really extend from the fact that what goes on at the racetrack really carries itself forward to the dealerships and vice versa. For instance, all the things we have to have on a successful team, from, you know, Cameron mentioned a few of them, you know, communication, teamwork, credibility, trust. Do you trust that person that's making that pit stop for you? Do you trust the person that's coming, taking care of the customer in the service drive, that's handing that person off to the technician? Innovation. Those things all apply on the racetrack as they do in the showroom or in our service areas. So the extension of what we do in terms of winning, in terms of losing, what do you learn from losing? You actually learn a lot more than you do from winning. Those all extend to our businesses as well, too, and as we call it, the common thread.
What originally drew you to the racing side of the business, and how has that shaped your leadership approach today?
Yeah, you know, I've always been a person interested in cars all my life. I had a car before I had my driver's license and worked on it. I had a Pontiac Ventura back in the day, 1972 Pontiac Ventura. I redid the engine. I had big wide tires on it. I had header exhausts on it, a four-barrel Holley mat, a carburetor. I could actually work on those cars back in the day. Worked as a mechanic, by the way, going through college at Montgomery Ward. Remember who that was. And from there, I really learned the nuts and bolts of a car, and I could put a good wrench on those cars, too. So I was always involved in the mechanical side of things and loved the performance side of it as well. I loved my hot rod and my car. And who would have known that through the years, taking that love of cars and love of racing could extend itself to where I am now, where I'm working with some of the best drivers in the world, obviously the best racing team in the world, you know, Roger Penske's teams, who have now had over 6,600 race starts in those 60 years. So my love started very, very early in high school, extended into college, working on cars. And now I'm so lucky to be associated with Roger and the team here, on the dealership side, our trucking side, but also on the race car side.
I'm just trying to picture you in a 72 Pontiac Ventura with your coat and tie on, Bud. I'm just, I just can't get that done anyways.
Well, picture this hairdo also, Michael. Picture the hairdo down the middle to the sides and hair over my ears. So just picture that as well visually.
Yeah, well, nice. I like that picture on me, but that's okay. So, you know, when you think about it, Penske, as we mentioned earlier, is one of the few organizations that really is deeply embedded in both motorsports and dealership operations all over the world, not just in the U.S. So how do you, you know, you talk about some of the commonalities between race operations and dealer operations, but how does the success you've had on the track translate into the showroom value? I'm sure salespeople ask you that all the time. So,
well, you know, it's a great point because we have 75,000 associates working for us around the globe, right? And on these continents and in these countries where we're in, we work from Australia to New Zealand to Japan, you know, the European states, obviously, or countries rather, and here in the U.S. and Canada. The thing about it is, it's interesting. The Monday morning cooler talk, no matter where you are, is about what Team Penske did the previous day. Are you in a dealership? Are you driving a forklift in one of our logistics centers? Are you a technician in one of our diesel centers? It all circles around the success we had that previous weekend. It's really an interesting dynamic we built within this company. There's two of us in the industry, you know, this, you know, Michael, it's ourselves and Rick Hendrick, right, that are able to take that learning from the showroom to the racetrack. And you see it with Rick every day as well, to what he's done, even on the branding on his car, you know, Hendrick.com, right? So we think that what we've learned, I would say this also, learned from losing, provides us so much knowledge about how to win. Think about this. We've had 6,600 starts in our career in racing. We've had 660 wins. I said another way, we've lost 90% of the time. Right? Be realistic. So winning is so hard, isn't it? It really is hard. And it's so hard in the showroom to capture that client's attention, capture the passion of the client, and have that salesperson provide that themselves, capturing that information to the F&I office, capturing the information of the customer coming in through our service drive that transfers over to our technicians, keeping that line of communication open, keeping the technology innovation obviously advanced to allow us to race and win, but also allowing us to capture more clients and get more service for our dealerships. So all of those characteristics go hand in hand to us from the showroom to the logistics center, to the racetrack.
And I said, when talking to students, it's funny how much, not funny, it's not strange, but they do always talk about after the weekend, the results that the corporation had on the racetrack. So I totally get that.
Well, and that leads right into, I have to say thank you, because Penske has invested heavily in education through its longstanding internal academy that they have in partnership with NADA. How has that commitment to what we would say is a structured training and continuous learning, how has that influenced performance across both your dealership and, I'm sure, whatever training you do on a regular basis for your racing team?
Well, thanks for that question, because in my other job also, I'm also in charge of human resources for our company. So I have the responsibility in terms to ensure that we're providing the training and the development, the onboarding, the tools for our folks to continue to develop and learn and be better people, but also better associates for our company. So, but NADA has been our foundation for learning for now decades, right? We have a dedicated training program with NADA where it's just dedicated to our managers. And every November, our senior leadership nominates 25 people to go to the NADA Academy. 25 people. When people get that letter that they've been selected to the NADA Academy, which goes from March to October every year, March to October, five sessions, it's an emotional thing for them, right? They're one of 25 people in our company who have been selected by their leadership to be part of learning more about fixed ops, parts, service, F&I, and sales. And integrated into all of that is leadership training. And the leadership training, in my mind, is as important or more important than those functional pieces of our business that I just mentioned. So we interlace all of that together in those sessions. We have the best of the best that come to this training for NADA. But NADA also goes far beyond just simply the academy training. They're now coming out to our stores providing us service training. They're providing us parts training, providing us advisor training. So we rely on the academy and NADA to do this for us because I don't have a lot of my own in-house trainers. Margaret Lane is my executive vice president of thought leadership. She drives this train for me and the leadership pieces of it. But I'm relying on Michael and his team to be the ones that provide us this continuous knowledge gain for our associates.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that. And really, it's been a absolutely wonderful partnership, and we're blessed to have work with people such as you and your team. Thank you for that. So some of the things you talked about, a lot of the things that we learned from each other, give us a couple of specific lessons that from the racing teams that you have used to actively apply within dealership networks.
You know, it's the technology pieces of it are very important for us, aren't they, today, right? How we interact with our customer. It's continued to change. When I first took the job at Penske Corporation over 20 years ago, this internet thing was new, right? I came into this role really overseeing our marketing department and putting together these integrated programs of our websites, right? And the autotraders.com and the cars.com and these integrators that help us sell cars. That was all very new then, but that was just 22 years ago. Think about what's happened in that amount of space and how advanced it's been. AI, obviously the topic of the day now, and for us as well, and how we integrate our customers through service scheduling and departmental scheduling, learning, productivity, efficiency. We're using both in our dealership, but we're also using it on the racetrack now. We can do simulations in the racetrack now with our drivers and the racetracks and understanding tire compounds, understanding camber caster setups, shock setups in a much more fast schedule than we could ever before. It may have taken us days. We can now do it in minutes. Interestingly, one of the things about AI scheduling is that many times in our dealerships, between 4 o'clock, a lot of the bays were empty. Right? But we want to schedule people 5 to 4 o'clock, right? AI doesn't care if it's empty at 4 or 5 o'clock. They want to fill it at 4 or 5 o'clock, don't they? So we gained a lot of efficiencies through this as a result of that, in terms of what we've taken from the racetrack, but also to our dealerships, and much of it's embedded in our technology.
Most dealership software was built for yesterday's workflows. Podium is built for what's next. An all-in-one system with the number one converting AI trusted by over 6,000 dealerships. Discover more at automotive.podium.com.
So, Bud, can you tell our listeners how you balance short-term performance goals like race wins or monthly sales targets with more long-term growth and sustainability?
Yeah, you know, we get our quarterly earnings every weekend in racing, don't we? Right? Every Sunday, we're racing 1, 2, sometimes 3 races on a weekend. And those are our quarterly results every single weekend. Okay? So that's short term, isn't it? It's really, really short term. But we're also looking at it in terms of looking for the championship, which is down the road, right? We're not looking for that win. We're looking for sustainability and performance so that we can win the championship that may be 8, 9, 10 months in front of us. So that's how we look at it from a racing standpoint, is sustainability throughout the course of the season. No bad, dumb mistakes that take you out of a race, take you away from the points side of it as well, too. Business is the same way. Every morning, what do I get at 6 o'clock in the morning every morning? I get a sales report. I know what our sales were for every one of our dealerships that previous day, month to date, quarterly to date, and year-to-date versus prior year, by brand, by dealership. That's short-term, isn't it? Okay. What's important for us as a public company is obviously quarterly results. I view that also as short-term. That's 2-3 months of duration, right? 1 month in duration. We have a few months left of us, a few weeks left of us before our June results are done and ending this quarter. But the longer-term piece of it is where, you know, Roger, myself, our CFO, our investor relations folks, our executive team are focused on the sustainability of the company, okay? And that goes to what's required in terms of a great balance sheet. Fortunately, we have one of the best balance sheets in the business. Our debt to equity is off the charts in terms of best in class. Our balance sheet, as we call it, safe and secure, learning from what we learned from COVID a few years ago, is just that, safe and secure. So we're looking at the investments we can make for the future to invest in new businesses, to provide dividends to our shareholders, but also to provide the opportunity to invest in CapEx for dealerships we have today. So that cash flow, that balance sheet, that sustainability is more important to us in terms of longer term pieces. But I got to tell you, I go back to my everyday of 6 a.m. sheet in front of me. What did we sell the previous day? It's all important.
It's always difficult for me sometimes to realize that growing up where we value short-term results, how do we sometimes suffer in our industry for not looking longer term? And that's a thanks for sharing your thoughts and ideas on that. So, and taking that a little further, then give us an example of leadership challenges where lessons from one part of the business has helped solve a problem in another part of the business.
Yeah, I'll give you a very unique one. It ties back to some other roles I have in my job description. I'm also chairman of the Detroit Grand Prix. I've been doing it now for 18 years, and it means it's a very important initiative in Detroit. It brings over $100 million to our city every year. It brings a focus on our city and downtown like we could never, ever afford to in terms of the postcard to the world. In 2012, we had just bought racing back after the challenges we're all facing in the time period before then, the financial crisis. And we brought racing back to Belle Isle. And I've been in charge of that event for a number of years. During that race, our track broke apart. It literally came apart. Cars were being damaged. We had to stop the race, put a red flag out there. And we could have called the race off and ended it there, you know, halfway through the race. Instead, myself and my very small group of teams said, okay, we have to go in action and get this race started again. So inherent to me was just jumping in. There was never a, this is not part of your job description to do this. You're not supposed to be doing that. I learned within minutes how to lay concrete down and how to make it dry and how to make it hard from a PSI standpoint within a matter of minutes. We fixed the racetrack. Multiple places had to come together in less than an hour and a half with my team out there. I remember my wife talking to my son saying on TV, is that dad on his hands and knees fixing the racetrack? And my wife said, no, his shirt's untucked and his hair's messed up. So, but it just was an inherent piece that's within our culture. And it starts from Roger in terms of the top-down portion of it. We'll never ask someone to do something if we can't do it ourselves. And that example I just gave you, I've heard many times I've gone out and saw people in our business, but also a part of our racing, that if you're willing to step in and do something that somebody else would do that's not part of your job description, that you may be so far elevated from, how can you really connect to your people and your business? I like to say this. When Roger goes into a dealership, the technician, the person washing the floor, the parts clerk, parts runner is just as important as a general manager. And when he walks to that dealership, when he talks to those people, they feel like they're the only person in the world at that moment because of the humbleness and the communication that he has. And what drives me crazy about Roger is he never forgets a name. Never forgets a name. I sometimes forget my name. So he's just that good. So taking those things and ensuring that you're never too far above doing what your folks do and knowing that they know that, in my mind, is important from racing to running a racetrack or in our dealership business.
It's a great, great example. And then on top of that, now you have the talent to be resurfacing your own driveway at home.
Yeah, that's such great advice. So, Bud, with your job description, it sounds like you manage a million things at Penske. But what would you say is the most underrated trait in a high-performing team?
I think there's two of them. Listening and engaging. It's so easy to jump in and just want to be heard, isn't it? And you know those people, right? That they're just listening to you because they're just want to say something in the fact. They're not even listening to you. Their eyes are somewhere else, fixed on something because they want to just jump in with their own opinion. So I think the art of listening is a lost art in many cases. I think the way we communicate by our phones and by text is a lost art. I often tell my sons, need to contact somebody. Just call them. Call them. Don't text them. Call them. Having that voice-to-voice connection is so easy, isn't it? We lose sight of that thing. So I think listening from a leadership standpoint is such a critical lost art that we all need to remember and think of. And then the other piece is engagement, right? Engagement covers a lot of things, from communication to touch points. Everyone likes to hear their name, don't they? Everyone likes to hear you mentioning someone else's name. There's no more important thing in the world to that person at that moment than just that. Do that. It's simple things. It doesn't cost you a dollar to do any of that. It doesn't cost you a dollar to listen better. It doesn't cost you a dollar to engage better. Those, in my mind, are the two pieces that I try to focus on when I try to look at my leadership skills that I need to continue to develop.
That's great. And the skills that we can teach a lot to, just say people from the digital generation, maybe a little bit more often than we do.
So absolutely.
Yeah. With all the changes going on in electrification, digital retail, and, you know, different ways that fans engage with dealers as well as with the sport itself, sport of racing itself, how do you see automotive retail and racing evolving over the next decade?
Yeah, it really has. I mean, the evolution that's happened just in the last, you know, 5 years on the racetrack, from what was before normally aspirated V8 or V6 engine to now sometimes a Formula One, a V4, you know, hybrid engine to IndyCar with a V6 hybrid engine, right? Taking that regeneration and making power out of it has really changed just in the last few years. This is not 10 years ago. This is in the last few years. So the focus on, obviously, sustainability with the manufacturers has led us to what we're doing today on hybrid technology, but it's also the complement that they're taking from our race engines to making their cars better from a hybrid standpoint. There are racing series that are totally BEV-related, 100% BEV. You know, Formula E is one that races around the world. It's more of a commercial play than a consumer play. I mean, when you think about it, we're not in that space. You know, we're still with the ICE engines with a hybrid technology to them as well, at least on the IndyCar side and the sports car side. That's evolving. What's interesting, isn't it, the fact that Formula One's even talking about now in 2031, coming back to a V8, normally aspirated, loud as hell engine with no hybrid technology. So isn't it funny how fast these curves change based upon consumer requirements and also industry requirements and government requirements? We've always been a company that, you know, insists upon let the consumer choose what they want. Don't have government choose for us. And we've seen what's happened in the last few years when that happens in terms of what the requirements were going to be in 2030 and 2035 in California, for instance. Look what's happening in the UK, right? You know, 27% of all cars sold right now need to be battery electric. Does the consumer want that? The fines being paid by the OEMs are substantial if they don't meet those requirements. So let the consumer choose. Develop the technology for the future, which the OEMs are doing, the smart ones are doing, but let them choose. And that's our belief in it also from the automotive standpoint. The trucking industry is the same way. Remember 3 or 4 years ago, Michael, there was a big focus on, you know, class 8 electric trucks. Not in my lifetime. I'm confident of that. These trucks weigh 8,000 pounds more, which means less payload. They cost about $150,000 to $200,000 more than a class 8 truck. I can drive my semi with, you know, 5 to 7 miles per gallon of diesel, 3,000 miles across the country. I could drive a battery electric class A truck, 250 miles. You do the math.
Doesn't make a lot of sense.
I think it works if you're hauling potato chips, bud.
It might also work, obviously, in an environment where you're hub and spoke to a you know, Amazon or a market like that, which is the last mile delivery. It works very well in that environment. But hauling across the country, not my lifetime.
No, it's that's going to be a big deal, obviously. And I agree, there are a lot of great uses. We just need to pick and choose the ones that work best. Hub and spoke, last mile delivery makes great sense. But, you know, you're right. Driving cross country, it's a different ballgame with 800-900 kilowatts of battery on board. So,
Bud, this has been so interesting. But before we go, what is one piece of advice or maybe one metric you never ignore that you can share with our listeners?
You know, the most important piece of our business is twofold, is the voice of our customer. And as Roger says, we have two customers, okay? It's the person working next to you, okay, in the office or in the stall, in the bay, on the next forklift next to you, and the other truck next to you. That's one of our customers. And of course, the other customer is the end customer who's coming in to buy our services. So never lose sight of the fact we have two customers, not the one just buying our products, but also the customer that's in the room with us, ensuring and helping us what we do on a day-to-day basis. So that requires, you know, constant monitoring, you know, constant metrics. What's our NPS scores internally for our employees? Are we close enough to them? We measure our NPS scores every year. I'm proud to say that our NPS scores are far above our peers in the industry. CSI, we measure CSI by dealerships, sales and service. That's important for us to know, but also our OEMs want to know how we're taking care of our customer too from our benchmark. So I think taking care of those two customers is something we can never forget. When you do forget, you're in real trouble because they're going to have people leaving. You're going to have customers leaving. Turnover is all part of that process. Our turnover is some of the lowest in the industry. It's still too high. I don't want anybody to turn over, right? But our turnover in this industry, as you know, is in the 20s and 30s and 40s. I'm happy to say we're in the teens, but it's still too high. And that's all going back, Michael, to what you talked about before, training and developing your people, communicating with your people, listening to your people, and engaging with your people and your customer.
Terrific. Well, Bud, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to join us today. Is there any last words you want to say about the upcoming big race? Talk about uniqueness, the big race here in D.C.?
Yeah, if you don't have enough time, it's a whole separate show. But, you know, last July, I had a dream along with Eric Shanks, who's CEO of Fox Sports, to do something for our country's anniversary in our nation's capital. That was to have an IndyCar race in the nation's capital. Everybody blew that idea off of me. I developed now a racetrack, a Pennsylvania Avenue, Independence Avenue, Constitution Avenue, and on August 22nd and 23rd, you're going to see the most amazing spectacle you've ever seen in our country. IndyCars traveling 190 miles an hour down Pennsylvania Avenue, across our National Mall. 288,000 people have requested tickets for this two-day event. It's going to be an extravaganza to celebrate our country that you will never, ever forget. And I'm the guy proud enough to be able to say, I'm leading it, and a great team to help me execute it.
Well, terrific. Well, congratulations, and thank you so much for all of the efforts you've given to the entire industry, much less this race to celebrate a 250th anniversary. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Cameron.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for today's episode. A big thank you to Bud Denker for joining us. Once again, I'm Michael Hayes.
And I'm Cameron Wilson. This has been Dealer Driven from NADA. Keep your dealership in drive, and we'll see you next time.